This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not reflect those of other podcasts or affiliates of this show or Gunna Geek. Check out other geeky podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. Get ready because geekiness commences in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
I prefer to jazzercise my demons, but yeah.
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Gallifrey Public Radio, now we have maths.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again. Welcome to episode 110 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we attempt to work through the five stages of loss, get hung up somewhere between depression and bargaining, hijack a Time Lord, commune with the recently deceased, uncover an insidious plot to use the afterlife as a villainous breeding ground, and discover the true identity of the mysterious Missy. Not bad for being in an emotional train wreck. I am Jay, and this week with me in the GPR studios is Haley. How are you doing tonight, Haley?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
Better than Danny. Let's say that. And Keir, how are you doing tonight, Keir?
It's so cold in here. Why is it so cold?
Well, jeebies. Okay, we've just finally kind of come around again. So I think we're in a safe place to be able to do this. Everybody remember their escape word, though, if you need it, right? If this is too much, we need to tap out. Mine is kumquat. Heading into this one, all through this series, even from the pre-series interviews, Moffat had been promising us that we were going to be going into an absolute thrill ride by the time we hit the finale. And then we heard that it was going to be a two-part finale. Then we heard that the second part of it was going to be over an hour in broadcast time, and just building and building and building. And we finally get the first taste of this in this week's offering, Dark Water. And it really looks like Moffat had been delivering right from the get-go. Yeah. We got, kind of knocked off our feet in the first 5 minutes.
You get knocked off our feet.
Too soon, dude.
Never soon enough. And then we end up spending the rest of the episode kind of rocking and reeling from all of the choices that the Doctor and Clara have to make about where they're going to go to pursue this. All these confusing and at times genuinely terrifying truths about what the Nethersphere really means and the 3W Corporation. And of course, the big revelation of Missy's true identity. And the real kicker out of this whole thing, as it occurred to me the first time I, get through the episode and the credits are rolling, I'm thinking, holy crap, we still have another episode to go. Yep. It's not over yet. So, current standing of emotional state, where are we right now?
Put through the ringer, basically.
Okay. Haley, how did you feel you came through this?
I'm okay because for the most part, I was like, he's not really dead, and then, but just when I was starting to think,
dead.
When I was just starting to think, maybe he is really dead, then it was like, nope, here he is. So I didn't get hit quite as hard by it.
Okay. You just kept telling yourself in the back of your mind, no, Moffat wrote this one. He's not really dead. Moffat wrote this one. He can't really be dead. But
the only time I thought for a second that he might really be dead was when Clara was on the ground crying next to the volcano.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I felt like that thought did run through my head. I'm like, no, this is a Moffat episode. People don't really die. And then I started flashing back to like every episode this season where people have died. And I was like, holy crap. He's really dead, isn't he? Oh my God, he's really dead. And then, you find out that yes, he actually, you hear the principal saying his thing. I'm like, wow, he actually died. And yes, we get he appears later, but he's dead.
Yeah. But he's talking at you from the other side of the glass at this point.
Yeah.
Now, so, there's kind of repercussions of this whole thing. We're dealing with something here where, as you mentioned, the school announcements and everything and everyone, bereaving him and such. We're not accustomed to dealing with the idea of bringing someone back from the dead in a very noticeable sense.
Yeah.
We haven't had instances where, 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years later, you know, someone says, oh, well, he was dead, but, you know, out of this mysterious set of circumstances, which we're not going to go into right now, so-and-so is back. It's always been something that happened quickly enough that it didn't cause some sort of big public stir.
Right.
We don't have that option here.
Mm-hmm.
So you could start saying, you know, place your bets. Will we get Danny back? Or
well,
is this...
That was one of my big questions was, how is this going to work out, you know, after the next episode? Like, you know, because we've got the interview from Samuel Anderson saying that, you know, he wouldn't mind coming back as Danny. Mm-hmm. So is there, like, do they actually get him back? Or is there, like, a loophole that they can or something? Basically, after the end of next episode, do we think that he's actually going to, you know, stay dead? Or do you think he's already Cyberman?
I think in this case, dead is dead. Mm-hmm. But in true Moffat fashion, he softened the blow by giving us time after death to see him off. You know, that's okay. I guess that's how he gets he deals with, well, you know, you mentioned through the series that, yeah, he's been killing some characters off. But now we're finding that, well, you get a little bit of bonus time.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's probably just as dead as River is. Like, that's what we're dealing with right now.
Hmm.
So, dead, but you can still make the phone call every now and again if you need to.
Yeah, you can go hang out anytime you want.
Well, so let's look at some of the information that we've now been provided. Some things, overt facts that we were just handed, you know, we get the exposition. Mm-hmm. And other ones where we have to try to glean a little bit. So the idea of the harvesting of corpses, mm-hmm. that's a cute one to start with. The actual physicality of the Nethersphere. What's your takeaway on this as far as the way they've gone to explain heaven, paradise, Nethersphere, the other side?
The fact
the
that
way
it's
I...
the Matrix or, you know, the
well,
Tron
just a
world?
Piece, a stolen piece?
Well, no, I mean like the 1999 movie, The Matrix, the city in Tron.
Yeah, the way I understand it is it's working a lot like the computer did in the library. It's capturing people's consciousness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're storing it in their little floaty globe.
Right. So it's interesting that, because I know a lot of people in their reactions and responses that have been coming around over the last 48 hours or so have been sticking with or have been having a little bit of issue with the idea of soul, mm-hmm. you know, or the capture of souls. But even in Seb's explanation to Danny, and I want to get back to Seb in a minute, but his explanation to Danny is, you know, your mind, soul, call it what you will. And he was just kind of dismissing it as you know, the one term they didn't use, which is the one that I think we all seem to be the most comfortable with, is the idea of the consciousness, mm-hmm. the upload and download of consciousness. Because that's the concept we've played with a lot in sci-fi on various natures. So, and we had it with the library. So, if the Nethersphere is just another way of explaining the sort of false world that's created within the Missy's stolen, acquired, built Matrix slice. We don't really know exactly how he/she.
Yeah, I'm not gonna put it on a label just yet. It's Missy's data slice. However she came by it, we'll see. We'll see if it's even important.
I'm betting they're not gonna even address it. They've got other things to deal with.
Unless the how she, he, she, that's it. She from now on. She. Exactly.
Old fashioned. She's a time lady.
Precisely. I'm a lady. I do lady things. Little Britain reference for anyone. Pick up on that one.
Like throw the doctor against a wall and make out.
Oh, that was disturbing.
For a lot of reasons. But the idea of we have to try to figure out or hope that we're going to be given a fuller explanation of how the Master survived.
Mm-hmm.
If the Master survived, or if something about this idea of the other side and this, you know, the backup of the consciousness kind of thing has something to do with how he, now she, was able to move beyond the disintegration that we were left with at Sound of the Drums.
Well, was he actually disintegrated? Because it seemed like he basically just forced Rassilon and the rest of them back into the time lock. It didn't seem so much like they were incinerated. It seemed like, no, you're not allowed to come out here. I'm going to push you back in there and sacrifice myself by trapping myself in there too.
Mm.
I never took it as, oh, wow, he just, you know, completely evaporated.
Okay.
Yeah, and we know that there's a few holes in that time lock now.
Correct. The time lock is not nearly as impervious, or even of the same description as what we were handed in a number of instances. You know, mm-hmm. it's changed in writers' hands. But I think even from a showrunner standpoint, I think there were reasons why a lot of that was left to be kind of malleable. I don't think the master, you know, thoughts on the master was always at the forefront of why they wanted to make these weaknesses in the lock. I think it really had more to do with the rest of the Time Lords and the state of Gallifrey, you know, and what condition it was in. Is this, though, do you think they're even going to broach the fact that Gallifrey persists? We haven't talked about it this entire series.
You know, I think that this might be the way that they go about bringing that storyline into it, saying that, you know, the master, Missy, however mm-hmm. it all played out, when whatever form that they took when everything happened, you know, was able to escape but through the crack or whatever the case was, and that this will be their way to say, oh yeah, hey, remember this thing that we set up in the big, you know, anniversary special? Yeah, we're bringing it back now. This is how it all plays into what we've been going through.
Okay.
I think they're going to hit it again really in the Christmas special this year.
Mm. Okay. Yeah,
I don't know if they will. I mean, I know like last season and the one before it really were tied into the series as a whole, but traditionally that hasn't been the case. And I don't know if Moffat's going to go for the, you know, the third time's a charm kind of thing. I think so.
I think it's going to become part of his MO now.
Really?
Well, yeah, because I mean, he's kind of seeing it as, you know, looking at the broadcast season mm-hmm. and knowing where your gaps are, you know, the idea of leaving the Christmas episode standalone for so long was just the way it was being done, because either it was, you know, they were keeping it lighthearted or keeping it separate from where their storyline was headed.
Well,
you know,
it traditionally, the show came on in the spring too. So, I mean, there was a huge gap between the end of the series and the beginning of the Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it could be that, but I don't know. It's just one of those things that I feel like, you know, it's a hard tradition to buck. So I'm not sure if Moffat's really going to, you know, be that brave to go again with the same thing, but I could be wrong.
Unless it's the way to be able to kind of, you know, throw that line over the chasm, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
and say, you know, keep talking about it, keep wondering about it, keep hypothesizing. You know, I'm going to keep putting, you know, cryptic interviews out there where I double back on my own words for 4 months until we get around to Easter time again. So, okay. I don't want to get too far away from everything that we're still, you know, dealing with here. There were, and this was some of the earliest responses from the folks that were either watching it live in the UK and giving us some of the play-by-plays. And yes, we were getting them. Thanks. You know, my phone. I had to recharge my phone 3 times that day because it was just blowing up all day long from going, well, what about, so the early signs of what was going on throughout. From symbology, you know, from images on the screen to little drop-ins in the lines, where was the point where the penny started to drop for each of you and you started getting a much better understanding of what was really going on?
As far as what, Missy's identity or the Cybermen?
Both.
For me, I'd say the Cybermen, like I'd seen the pictures. I knew that the Cybermen played into the story. It wasn't until, you know, the doctor says his line, I feel like I'm missing something obvious, and the door shut.
The door's closed with the two eyes.
And yeah. I was like, okay, well, clearly they're, you know, they've decided to broadcast it now. And I felt like an idiot for not recognizing that before then. But
okay.
That was the moment that kind of clicked into place for me. I knew it was coming, but I wasn't really, you know, watching for it overtly.
Go ahead. I had seen the images for the Cybermen and everything. I knew they were supposed to be in the finale. But I completely forgot that this was the finale and we were supposed to see the Cybermen.
Oh, that's now. This week. Oh,
oh yeah.
This finale. Okay. Yeah.
I think I started as soon as they were, something was nagging, you know, just like the doctor, you know, I feel like I'm missing something. Something was nagging at me when they first get to, the 3W and they're looking at the tanks.
Yeah.
And the camera pulls back and you see up through multiple floors and there's like 6 floors and you're looking at the tanks all kind of stacked on one another, in all of those little chambers. And it was kind of like that beehive kind of a look. And I'm like, wait a second. because I just recently had gone back and had plowed through a lot of Troughton material and, you know, obviously came across Tomb of the Cybermen. And it's the same stack of the individual little hives, you know, and that, and I got that now. When, I couldn't tell what was eating at me.
When somebody pointed that out to me, I was like, oh, I really am Dr. Idiot.
But it was the moment where they mentioned that the bodies were being maintained through visibility through their containment exoskeletons. Okay. That's where it finally clicked. Yeah. And, like, and then I started seeing the circle with the tearlet everywhere.
Yeah.
Every folder that was being pulled out of a file cabinet, it was on Danny's file, it was on the door, it was on the phone, it was on the... Okay, you're really hitting me a lot harder than I need to be beat about the head with this.
Yeah. Now, when they said the, you know, containment exoskeleton, the first thing I thought is, okay, so that's why Danny still looks like Danny. They basically give you a, you know, a U version bodysuit. So
a meat suit, like an Edgar suit.
That's honestly what I thought it was. So I didn't pick up on the exoskeleton thing. And then as soon as I realized what the problem was, I was like, oh, that's what they meant by exoskeleton. Got it. Yeah.
But that led for such a great slow reveal.
Oh yeah, and they dragged it out too, and it was great.
Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad that they did, because we think about the last time we got the Cybermen, we were tearing them apart because we didn't really like the way they were being handled in Nightmare and Silver.
Yeah.
You know, they, you know, give them super fast motion, use it once. Mm-hmm. Give them the ability to immediately repair and upgrade themselves on the fly.
And use it once.
And use it once. And their only real strength was in the fact that there were just countless numbers of them.
Mm-hmm. No matter how many you destroy, there were zombies. It was no matter how many you destroy, there's always 1,500 to take its place.
Yeah. Yep. But they hadn't really been creepy since Amy Pond realized what upgrades really were, you know, and first opened up the, you know, the brain pan on one of these things. And now I think we've got some of that back.
Honestly, I think the only time that they were really scary for me was with the 10th Doctor story, the Age of Steel, I think it was. Okay. When they do the whole, like, you know, mechanized upgrading thing. And
oh, yeah, you're hearing the buzzsaw going and whatnot.
At that moment, I was like, oh, that's not cool. And then, that was the last time I was really like, wow, Cybermen are messed up. After that, it was always just like, okay, how's he going to beat them this time?
Well, there's just something really disconcerting about the idea that this is an enemy that's coming at you, that enclosed within them is one of your own dead.
Yeah.
That's, I find that genuinely disturbing. And the fact that they're really playing on that right now with the, you know, that's one of the key flaws of the human race is that there's more dead than there are living. I mean, it's so many lines out of this script, from the disturbing lines to the comedic lines to the emotional lines. I mean, Moffat really has come back strong on this one. Say what you will about the guy, but he killed it in this episode.
Yeah. Oh, he really did. All right, so going back to Missy, when was the moment that everything kind of, like, what was your process of who the heck is she?
Haley, take this one first.
Okay, really until he said the mistress, I was like, oh, okay. But before that, I didn't know. Like, I knew he was lying. She, sorry. Mm-hmm. Pronouns are hard. I knew she was lying when she said, I'm a droid. I was like, no, that doesn't make sense with what we've seen leading up to this. I don't buy that. But I didn't know what was going on until the reveal.
Yeah.
Okay. Right up to the line. Okay.
Yeah. All
right. I was really skeptical with the hand on heart scene.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that he was lingering there after she walked off, he still had his hand out there, and they were trying to play the scene like he was, you know, oh, I touched
the boob. Just uncomfortable. Yeah.
but there was something more going on there, and the way Capaldi was selling it, you could tell that there was, you know, the gears were turning on some different level than what Clara was inferring from that. But then when you get, because we kind of got it in two stages, right? We got the whole Time Lady aspect of it.
Yeah.
Which, okay, throw all those other possibilities off the table. Now you're dealing with a much smaller funnel.
Right.
Now, is it the Ronnie? Is it this? Is it another completely newly created character? The moment when we got to that, I had already put the Ronnie story away. I just didn't think it was going to really work. And I actually had this conversation with our friend Badger as we were live watching it. And And he, you know, brought up a point that for anyone who really only knows the show from 2005 on, it would have been kind of clunky to have to do a little backstory explanation as to who the Ronnie was.
Right.
Could have worked. You know, could have been done with a couple of lines of dialogue. But where they went was obviously clearly far more impactful.
Yeah. Yeah, I went through a little bit. When, you know, when she was saying that she was a droid, my first instinct was, you know, to believe it. And I was like, oh, so this is the first interaction and everything that we've gotten after that point is going to be, you know, like everything we've seen before is what comes after this. So I thought there was like some, you know, some wibbly wobbly stuff in play.
Yeah.
Well, she was selling the kind of the herky jerky droid delivery very well too, but still being delightfully creepy as hell.
For a second, I thought she was kind of acting like the TARDIS did when she was in human form.
Right.
And I was like, ooh, that could be interesting. Like another TARDIS is stalking the Doctor or something. But that's not where they went with it.
Yeah. But after that, like, it was the, you know, when she says that she was a, you know, when the Doctor makes the connection saying that she was a Time Lord, you know, and she's, her first thing was, you know, the one that you left behind or the one that you left for dead. I immediately start thinking, River? Could this be River? Like, did we get, like, a severely deranged version of River back? And, you know, then it, I started going through, like, all the possibilities. And I'm like, okay, no, the Ronnie? Could it be the Ronnie? And then, you know, she says the line, he says something about two hearts, and she says, your hearts. I'm like, holy crap, is this the Valyard? Are we seeing a new Valyard? Like, new regenerations mean a new Valyard, right? And it wasn't until she said, you know, when she said her name again, I was like, oh, okay, this is the route that they're going to go. They're going to go. And I couldn't be happier with it, honestly. Mm-hmm. I thought it was great.
She's proven, now that we've gotten more than just a couple of lines per episode from her, you know, and we get to see exactly the kind of fun that Michelle Gomez is having with this character. And now that she's going to be able to play it full tilt.
Oh, yeah.
I genuinely hope, and I know it's a little early to say this sort of thing, I really hope that they don't end, you know, make this a kind of a two-episode, you know, John Sim, you're in, you're out kind of thing.
And then we don't ever see her again?
Bring back the returning arch-nemesis kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, not to
I
the
wanna
extent
see her
of...
Again.
Yeah, but we definitely don't want to get it to the point where it started getting in the Tom Baker years where it was like, oh, crap, he's back again. All right.
Yeah. Hey, it's Saturday. The Master must be back.
Yeah. Right. Hold on. Let me find another spaceship that we can wing him off in at the end so he can say, curse you.
Well, you know, when the revelation came and I had that moment of, oh, yay, this is going to be awesome. I love this. And then, like, my brain started to go into, you know, filling in the blanks that I've seen before and saying, okay, this is how it all played. I got to the part with the, you know, the 3W welcome package, and my brain instantly filled in the blanks and changed the Doctor and Missy to John Pertwee and Anthony Anley. And it was so disturbing.
Awkward nose kisses. Yeah. Creepy nose kisses. But man, all right. So what was vocalize the reaction when it all finally got handed to you? Because mine has to be bleeped.
Yeah. Oh yeah, mine too.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just have to go back to my my text messages with Keir while I was watching it, because I was in class when it came on, so my phone's sitting there, you know, vibrating on my desk for, you know, a solid hour.
Sorry, I'm not like, sorry.
I can't look at it. But then I got home and I started watching it, and the exact progression went from what the blank. Oh, this is gonna be good. Here it comes. Holy blanking blank.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. That's pretty accurate. All right, so yours was more kind of the shock and surprise. I think it was a bleep, yeah, because I knew that this is now opening the gates to some fun. Mm-hmm. We're gonna have some serious fun with this next week, because I think, you know, we'll get to some reactions that we've got from some of the listeners. It seems like a lot of people. You know, we've been getting a lot of people saying, you know, Capaldi's like rising in the ranks. He's like my second, third favorite Doctor at this point. I'm just kind of loving what he's been putting into this. And, you know, and I'm glad that's been winning some people over. And now, you know, we've got this Missy character who we didn't really know what to do with for the longest time. And we get, you know, little hints and clues there. She's really weird. She's really creepy. Her makeup is just really disturbing me. And now we get this. Now we can sit back and say, we've got a compelling story. Because we have a real reason for the adventure that they're on.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't just a, you know, show me something cool or ooh, that's odd. Let's go check that out. This isn't a Scooby-Doo episode. We've got genuine concern for characters' survival. We've got a companion who is far beyond distraught, but at the doctor's request is locking it down. I need you battle mode, shoulders back, you know. Mm-hmm. Stop doing that thing with your eyes. It's like they inflate.
I laughed out loud at that part. I really did. That was great.
And it came at just the perfect moment. And I think that's one of the things that maybe it's because it's Capaldi, you know, fleshing this out, or maybe just the writers and Moffat have really been kind of paying some very close attention to this. There has been this great balance of emotion and concern, and then comedy, and then action, and then, you know, and a cycle just going around and around. So you never get too dragged into something before you get an icebreaker or some sort of a speed shift.
Yeah.
To kind of keep you from getting bogged down.
It's almost like they're taking notes from Joss Whedon. You know, it's like, if a scene is scary, make them laugh. If they're laughing, scare the crap out of them.
Mm-hmm. Or if they're feeling comfortable, kill someone.
Yes.
Mostly kill someone.
Oh, it's Wednesday. Time to kill somebody.
Make it stick. So, all right, well, let's take that, because that's something, too. I mean, we're not really going through this episode, you know, chronologically or anything, but you're 5 minutes in and Danny's dead.
Yeah.
And there's no leading into it. You don't even get the satisfaction of seeing the event. You get nothing but response.
And at the exact moment that, like, Danny's in the street, or he's, you know, he's walking, and then they cut back to Clara, and there's no music. That's when the music cuts. And I was like,
I thought something was up with the sound.
Yeah.
Until you start hearing that quiet click to let you know that the line is still open.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a couple people have said, you know, why didn't you hear a screech of tires or a thump or oh, God, my leg or something. Oh, my skull hitting
the ground or something.
Mm-hmm.
Something. But I'm going to have to check it one more time just to see whether it was a moment where Claire was just busy prattling. And, you know, and therefore, we as the listener, you know, the fly in the room, don't get that because she's busy blathering. Mm. I don't know. I think that
it was creative storytelling at that point. It was just like, okay, we have a point to get to, and reality would interfere with that. So we're just going to take creative license, and you have to accept it.
We're seeing the event from Clara's perspective anyways. So even if she had heard something, she wouldn't necessarily have known what to make of it.
Here's a thought. Because you notice that, you know, as you said, the score cuts off at the same moment. Maybe because we're sort of getting this from Clara's perspective, you know, and she's trying to work through, her brain's trying to wrap through the fact that she's having this conversation that she promised that they would have, you know, and this is the time to have that conversation. She's been trying to lay out her thoughts on her weird little post-its all over the place. But so that in her head, she's hearing this kind of turmoil, all these voices, here's all these points I need to come across, here's the things I need to say, oh, you know, and she's hearing her blood pumping in her ears, and she's hearing her own breath in her head and that sort of thing. And, you know, and the score is really kind of her soundtrack, you know, it's her montage kind of music, and she's building herself up to it. And then at the point where something kind of snaps her out of it, and she takes that pause, we lost the other side of what was going on in the phone call because she had all of this tumult in her head.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when things go quiet. Something weird happened on the other end of the phone that makes her shut up for a second. But by that point, it's already gone quiet.
Yeah. That's a possibility. I mean, I chalk it up to the fact that, you know, they have a story to tell. Mm-hmm. And it was told very, very well.
Extremely well.
I don't think that, you know, yes, that you should have heard something, fine, whatever, you know, whatever the reason that we didn't hear it, we didn't need to hear it for the story to be, you know, to be told the way it needed to be told. Mm. And it would have robbed that moment of the impact had they, you know, had they done the screeching tires and the dropping phone and all that stuff. And you would have been like, oh crap, he's dead. And you just would have watched Claire react to what you already knew.
Mm.
But instead, we go through it at the same time. And it worked so much better than, hey, let's be realistic and make sure that everybody knows what happened.
The shot of Danny turning with his eyes getting big as the camera zooms in towards his face.
Yeah.
Erk, thump, 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 thump. Or seeing the phone arching through the air.
Right.
It must have been thrown clear. But that, oh, man, having the passerby pick up the phone. I mean, just so many elements of this episode, just in terms of the way that the story was conveyed. I'm so pleased. It's so impactful. Now, what are some of the elements, you know, through all of this, through a lot of the writing and the dialogue that we enjoyed, there were a lot of very important things, I think, handed over to us over the course of some of the dialogue here. I've got a few that are kind of on my shopping list, but what were some of the lines specifically that resonate with the two of you?
I think the best line from the episode was, "Do you think I care for you so little that betraying me would make a difference?"
Mm.
Yeah.
We needed that. We needed that assurance of where the doctor's head and heart really were when it came to Clara.
Right, because the two of them have been at odds for so long. And, you know, she's lying to Danny. She's lying to the doctor. She, you know, all this stuff is going on. And they're, you know, they've been at odds. She's leaving. She's not leaving. She's lying to him. We needed to know, okay, this is where both characters stand. Mm. And I feel like we really did get that.
So what else as far as, you know, specific things that were kind of that came across either in their exchange, you know, when they're talking about, well, you know, we had a lot of people that were, I know we were having this conversation with our listener and friend Soleil. He wanted to know about what was going on with the whole key sequence, you know, the dropping of the keys.
Right.
Now, obviously, we know now in retrospect that this was just a bit of manipulation on both of their parts. Both of them thought they had the upper hand in this ruse. So take a sidestep for a second and about the whole idea of, you know, I wanted to see how far you would go.
Yeah.
And you notice now at this point, all of the jokes about PT or about PE, you know, the, you know, soldiers and doing teaching maths and all of that has now been completely cast aside because the doctor has now seen that this boyfriend who has just been a distraction at this point, now in her mind, and now the doctor is can clearly see this, matters more than winging around the universe to go on adventures.
Yeah. Honestly, it felt to me like it was Clara's moment to really make her decision, where, you know, she's been flip-flopping back and forth and she didn't know, you know, whether she wanted to be with Danny or whether she wanted to travel in the TARDIS. And this was her moment of, look, you've been dancing around it long enough. You have to choose. Like, you've hit the point where you can't delay this anymore. And unfortunately, it took something this serious to happen. And at that point, she completely breaks and is just running on base instinct.
Mm. And do you think that has anything to do with the reasons why, even though, because we've had some, you know, some Kodiak and a couple of other of our listeners have been asking about, but the finger snaps, are you ever really locked out of the TARDIS? Doesn't she know that just as well as he does, that the keys are really just there for the companions and it isn't really necessary? Well, I'm wondering whether, you know, in her grief, that she's just trying to grasp for things that she can take control of. And I also think, by the way, that the whole finger snap thing only works for companions when the TARDIS wants them to anyway. So you know, that's kind of a moot point.
It makes no sense that something as advanced as the TARDIS would be unlocked by a simple metal key. Sure. Like, I think that's more symbolic than anything. And it's, you know, it's the codes or whatever, however you want to say it, the keys are crucial for gaining access to the TARDIS. These are the way into the TARDIS. When you snap your fingers, yes, that, you know, the TARDIS understands what's going on, but it's the key in your pocket that really grants you access to the TARDIS. So it's, there's lots of ways to explain it. And I feel like it's stupid to assume that these little keys are what, you know, get you into the TARDIS. It's got to be more complex than that. And I think destroying the keys has much more impact than, oh, I can't do the little lock thing.
See, I think it's strictly symbolic. I think at no time is a physical key required at all. You get into the TARDIS when the TARDIS lets you in.
Yeah.
And the TARDIS will let you in either because the doctor has given you the go-ahead to be able to do so, or because it's in the best interests of the TARDIS and her doctor, its doctor, to let you in. So no key, no entry. You didn't earn it. And the finger snap trick and that sort of thing, I'm going to let that work for you because, you know, you're not a threat. You've already been given the go-ahead.
Yeah.
That's just me personally. I think the key is really just there for symbolism.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's one of those things, again, you know, the same thing with, you know, why didn't we hear the tire screech or Danny's head cracking on the, you know, this is the story that needed to be told, and this is how it needed to be told. So I'm willing to give it a pass this once.
Okay. Speaking of stories then, we finally get, you know, we're getting a lot of our loose threads kind of stitched up a bit here. We get the reason why Danny is somewhat shell-shocked. Mm-hmm. You know, we get an insight in his PTSD, and the boy who comes to visit him, you know, for lack of a better term, in the Nethersphere. Your takes on whether or not the boy was actually the one killed behind the door, or whether he was the survivor that watched his parents die, or something of that sort. I don't know that they necessarily want to say out loud, "I killed a child." Yeah. I don't think that's something they want to overtly put in the script.
Right. I don't think they're going to say that, but I think that's what happened.
Yeah. That's the way I see it playing out is, you know, he sees someone in the building and opens fire. You know, you're in a war zone. That's what you do. And then he opens the door to realize who it was that he actually just put 6 or 7 shots into.
Right. Because he didn't even look. He just kind of pulled his gun around the corner and started shooting.
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
Double taps are for chumps.
Haley, you had a question, or at least an observation that you wanted to bring up about the fact that the boy's reflection shows up in the iPad screen in the final seconds.
Right. You know, Danny's trying to think if he wants to delete his emotions or not. And then you, in just the last fraction of a second, you see that kid's reflection in the iPad. I think that kid is what's going to stop him from hitting the button.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the question that I'm wondering with this is specifically, is it because the boy has something that he finally wants to say? Or is it just going to be there as just an opportunistic thing that gives Danny just enough pause to keep him from going forward with the delete process? And, you know, and it just becomes just a vehicle to kind of move the story forward. Is he going to have his moment of being able to actually communicate with this, with his greatest regret, or, you know, call it what you will?
I think that he's actually going to stop Danny. Like he's going to be the one to physically come up and be like, "Don't do that." You know, and that's going to be the key to like start explaining to Danny what's actually going on so that he can know what's going on the outside. Because at this point, he's completely clueless. He has no idea. All he knows is that Clara was able to call him somehow and has no idea that Cybermen are invading London.
Right.
So we're going to give the boy the ability to speak English?
I think so.
Yeah, okay. They're computer programs at this point, so it's all being translated.
Right.
Right, and it's in Time Lord technology, so, you know, translation matrix.
Yeah.
All right. Came to the realization, knowing what we were planning for coming into the two-part finale here, that we have not had UNIT involved yet.
This is true.
Okay. So that's
But now we've got Cybermen running down the street, so they're going to be there pretty soon.
Yes. Yeah. Which, by the way, and we can share the images on there, they were doing, you were talking about the fact that they had that great shot that lined up with Tomb of the Cybermen when you're seeing the tank stacked up. Mm-hmm. You also had the Cybermen walking down the steps from St. Paul's.
Yeah. Which is and actually, the Doctor and Missy and the Cybermen all coming out of the royal doors at St. Paul's.
Mm-hmm.
I read that story and that was incredible because nobody gets to come out of the royal doors. Like that's the Queen and her family and that's it.
I guess they're big Who fans.
Yourself this right.
Oh,
we are slightly
doctor?
Amused. Yeah, I mean that was almost shot for shot, you know, exactly out of the Troughton episodes, the invasion.
Mm.
So that was just incredibly cool for anyone that has watched that story. That was just like, oh yay, they're doing it again.
Yeah. And up in the creepy factor again. Okay. I did say I wanted to get back to this. So we're talking about the fact that, you know, if the Nethersphere is really the way that we're sort of seeing this alternate reality from within the Matrix slice, mm-hmm. stolen, acquired, built, however she came about it. Does that mean that if we're kind of going with that sort of that Matrix, and I'm talking 1999 Matrix here, you know, existence on the inside, does that mean that Seb is just a program or a subroutine?
Well, yeah, that's how he got uploaded to the Orient Express as Gus.
Oh, nice. That's clever.
Look at the 3W logo and then look at the little window thing that Gus was in. And you think about it, they're constantly, you know, harvesting people that are dead. Here's someone who died, but, you know, is still running around. Well, I mean, that's research for, you know, how are we going to upgrade these people? I seriously think that that episode is going to play far more into the story than it seemed like at the time. It seemed like at the time it was just a one shot, you know, here, everything's done. I think it's going to really come into the next episode.
Okay. I hadn't really thought about that one. I'm also wondering whether there was going to be any sort of a use of the doctor, can't even remember his name now, who was the founder.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least who Dr. Chang, I'm sorry, Dr. Chang was told was the founder of 3W, which, you know, it could just be a story that he was told in order to go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering whether there might have been something more to that, too.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if that was actually something that this doctor was working on. And then, yeah, Missy decided, hey, this could be of use. And
yoink.
Yeah, basically. I wouldn't be surprised if she's the one that killed him. Yeah,
right.
And he became the first Cyberman. It's like, hey, I'm going to do this to you and, you know, see how this process works. You know, he was Han Solo in the Carbonite Chamber.
Okay, so do you take them at their word that this is something that's always been going on? People don't, their consciousness really continues on like this, and it's not something they caused to happen?
I'm still trying to determine exactly how this consciousness capture is being facilitated and how long it's been going on.
See, I think they're going to take a panel off of, like, the Earth somewhere, and there's just going to be a big, giant, three green blinky lights thing going.
I don't know. I feel like it's more, you know, we downloaded their consciousness in the moment before their death kind of thing. Where,
right.
You know, they're not actually dead. It's just, no, everything, you know, Missy or whoever has designed this technology that can, you know, they can detect when someone is dying, and the moment before, you know, the switch is flipped, they yank the person, and then you can, you know, go on and be like, well, what happens after that moment? Do, you know, is there an after, and it maintains that mystery without, you know, setting it in stone what the, you know, afterlife or whatever becomes.
Really is.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, as we were talking about in the last couple of weeks, you know, there's a genuine concern of taking a show that has been at its essence a science fiction program for 50 years. And then suddenly saying, yeah, I know we were dealing with aliens and time travel and deep space and that sort of thing. And every once in a while we go beneath the Earth's crust and do that kind of thing. But we never really dealt with the paranormal.
Yeah.
Every time we started dealing with the paranormal, we gave it a sci-fi explanation or spin at the end of it all. It's not really a ghost haunting the place. It's a scientist that's trapped slightly out of sync with time or whatever the case may be. And I was concerned about this, going, I don't want to deal with heaven and hell. I'm not watching Supernatural here. I'm watching Doctor Who.
No, and I think that it's going to be like that episode of Star Trek TNG where, you know, this planet, they transport their people to heaven, so to speak. And then they find out, oh, no, they're transporting them to the moon. And, you know, they explain this whole process and this is all, everything that's happening. And then as they leave, they're like, well, I did detect a strange energy field around the planet that I have no idea what the heck it is. So maybe... And I think that's the thing that we're going to get here is that they're going to explain everything to a certain point and be like, but there's a possibility that something happens after they downloaded them. And so I think that that's the way that they're going to play it out so that one, it makes a compelling story and you really can buy into it. And two, they don't, you know, cement in stone that this is how things play out after you die.
Yeah. I think that's a can of worms they really don't want to open.
Yeah.
No. Better to well, I'm not gonna say distract, but better to keep the emphasis and the focus on, you know, dealing with the threat at hand rather than going into too much explanation as to how did you do it and how long have you been doing it and so forth.
Exactly.
I think we need to, obviously it makes a lot more sense now how the idea of knowing that exact moment, you know, if you've got a time lady at the helm controlling where to be in order to grab the consciousness of the about to decease kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little easier to file away. But as for how it's actually done, you know, I mean, think about what we did in the library where it was not an instantaneous process like that. And just, I gotcha. I gotcha. Oh, you nearly fell there. I gotcha. Hold on. Here, sit in this hard drive for a second. You nearly bumped your knees. I'd be concerned about over-explanation.
Yeah. And I mean, that's something that we've run into a couple times this season is where it's like, you know, if you're going to take this crazy, you know, string theory to the nth degree science and use that as your explanation, fine, I'll buy that. If you're going to take actual science and twist it just a little bit, then I'm going to have a problem.
Nope. Keep it crazy, kids.
And I think that that's, that's going to be where this either works really well or all falls apart, is which way are you going to go with it? Are you going to put just a dash of science in there so that, you know, it sounds cool? Or are you really going to try and explain it and, you know, leave gaping holes in it? So, but I did think it was interesting, and through talking with a couple friends over the past 24 hours, I want to say it was Soleil. I could be wrong. I'm not sure. So if I'm somebodying you, I apologize. But the doctor's reaction, you know, when Clara is trying to get him to go after Danny, is we're going to, you know, go to hell. And it's, you know, one, it makes that clever, you know, you think he's telling Clara off kind of thing. And then you start to think about it, and it's the, so his instant reaction, you know, his instant thought of the afterlife is hell. Doesn't matter, good, bad, undecided, whatever, you know, it's his first thought is hell. Hmm. And it really does fit who this doctor really is. I mean, he's got a very negative outlook on most things. And, you know, he's a pessimist. That's basically what it is hey, things worked out great. Fantastic. Okay. This next crisis, though, that's going to be a world ender. You know, and that's really how this doctor seems. And I think it really does fit. So, you know, clever writing, yes, but at the same time, a little bit telling.
Right. Yeah. He said go to hell instead of, you know, what do we do now? Well, heaven knows.
Yeah. So, I don't know, but I do think that the, you know, this is the first time that we've gotten a two-parter from Moffat since Silence in the Library and Force to the Dead. Mm-hmm. And I think it's absolutely fantastic. I think that we're seeing something on par.
Right. Yeah. Have you been coming across any real negative responses to this anywhere?
No.
Other than the fact that I know a lot of, I don't even know how to categorize these people. Individuals who are upset at the fact that we've got a Time Lady because now they're all concerned. And I cannot fathom why this is an issue with anyone about the fact that this opens the door for a potential female doctor.
Ooh. So I'm just going to go ahead and label them as misogynistic bastards.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah. No, I mean, all the responses that we got, we've had a couple people who, you know, who are ecstatic that they guessed it right. Like Vince wrote to us on Facebook and said, yep, I guessed it right. But then again, who else could it have possibly been? And then in parentheses, I mean, I'm sure there's literally hundreds of people it could have been, but none of them would have had the impact. And since you know they are going for impact, well, there's really only one person that could have that level of impact. And my comment in parentheses is longer than the original comment. Scott wrote and said, well, she was a Time Lord, so does that count? On a side note, I can't believe the outrage I was reading elsewhere about the female master. So, you know, again, going into that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But one thing he did say was, let's see, the rest of the episode was kind of bleh until the big reveal to me. So this really didn't strike him as much as it did us, I guess.
I don't know. Maybe, I guess if you're not really emotionally invested, or if you haven't really gotten emotionally invested in this past series with Clara, mm-hmm. and sort of seeing her journey, then maybe, you know, because there's still some people that said, you know what, I get it, she's doing a better job, or I get her character a little better, but I'm still not clicking with her, I mm-hmm. personally don't, then maybe this wasn't, because this was really a lot about her being torn down, and what she's doing to try and take that last grasp.
Yeah. So, Scott, I'm going to issue you a challenge. I want you to go over to the forums at gunnageek.com and on the posting for this episode, I want you to explain exactly why this didn't strike you, because I want to know and I want to be able to have a conversation with you about it. So go over there and let me know exactly why you didn't think that this was absolutely fantastic. And then
Prove yourself, sir.
Then I'll tell you why you were wrong. No. Michael wrote and said, I was almost wondering if she was the Ronnie. So a lot of that going around, people wondering, you know, if that was the character that we're going to bring back. Mm. But Richard wrote to us on Twitter and said, so we have our answer. I'm looking forward to seeing how Stephen Moffat will explain this.
Yeah.
And I do want an explanation. I don't want just, oh, no, she's here. Accept it. Move on. I want at least a little bit of explanation. I don't need, you know, scientific diagrams and things like that, but I do want at least a little something.
I don't think there's any doubt that we'll get a good villain's exposition.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if the master mistress does anything, it's monologuing.
Yeah, exactly.
And as she's standing there on screen, her goatee will begin to grow.
Yeah. And then Preston wrote on Twitter and said, okay, the master, really? Think the Ronnie would have been a much better reveal. I thought the master was disintegrated. I need more explanation on how she returned. So again, apparently I was in the minority thinking that the Master didn't get disintegrated. Don't know.
Well, but then there's also, bear in mind that you know, if we wanted to, and this was just, I was kind of playing this through this morning as I'm going through, I forget if it was like the second or third watch through this. We have seen the Time Lords reach through the crack.
Mm-hmm.
It just sounds bad. and have done what we had considered unthinkable as far as not just the regeneration reset, but the potential dissolving of the rule entirely, mm-hmm. as it applies to the Doctor. We also know that in some potential circumstance, the Master had been sealed in with Gallifrey within the time lock.
Yeah.
We even thought about, you know, what would happen if we had got another glimpse into Gallifrey and the Master had taken over and we just didn't know it because we didn't know what was happening within the lock.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a possibility. So, you know, we've got questions about how did the Master return? Well, how did the Master survive? How did the Master return? How did the Master get a hold of the, of this Matrix data bank and so forth? And
when is the Master going to recruit the Ronnie and form Evil Girls Club against the Doctor?
Oh, the Sisterhood of the Time Traveling Pants. I just made that up right now. Just right now. Write this down. It happened at 10:20 p.m. Eastern.
And then Catherine wrote in and said, I just want Clara and Pink to have a happily ever after. Missy is going to jack that up. I'm a hopeless romantic and I like happy stuff. I was watching last week's episode and I hate the this is the end conversation we have seen over and over with Clara and this Doctor. We all know y'all are going to make it at least 99% of the time. I did love how the Doctor defended their friendship. Like, duh, Clara, I know I suck, but we are friends. And that was one of the moments that I did like in this episode when the Doctor, you know, basically told her, no, I know I'm horrible, but you're stuck with me kind of thing. And it gave you that moment of, okay, this is an actual friendship. Because they had started to chip away at that believability a little bit and make you question how strong their friendship really was. And just with, you know, that simple exchange, it was kind of like, okay, nope, they're good. It was a rough patch, but we're moving on now.
Right. Mm-hmm. The friendship that lasts to hell and back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, that's all the feedback that we got so far. So, yeah.
Does that mean at all that you think that we're going to have a slight change in their dynamic now? That they've been able to air this in front of each other?
I think it depends on how it plays out. It depends on if Danny stays dead or, you know, if he's mostly dead or, you know, if he has to live in Clara's computer or something like that.
So every once in a while she feels lonely, she just fires up her laptop.
Yeah,
Clara's
exactly.
Dead boyfriend can go hang out with the Doctor's dead wife.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Too soon.
But I think it depends on that, and it depends on, well, I mean, how things go in the Christmas episode. I mean,
and whether we even have Clara sticking around now.
Yeah. So it could go any number of ways, really.
Hmm. So next week, things get military.
Yeah. Yes, they do. I'm excited about seeing UNIT come back. I really am.
Yeah. And not just UNIT as far as just, you know, getting a big old laser beam pew pew showdown, but we'll have Kate the Briggs Stewart. Daughter back. Yep.
Kate.
And we're going to have,
Osgood.
Osgood.
Mm-hmm.
Which will be fun.
But is it really Osgood or is it the Zygon Osgood? I don't know.
Yes. As we've learned from the extended content in the audiobooks, Zygons are lovely people too. They are. I mean, they survived as family members for decades and we didn't even know it. But Those Rutons, screw them.
Those guys are just right bastards.
They are.
Oh, but yeah, a couple people did actually decide to watch this episode, though. We actually got 5.27 million for the overnight, which is the highest overnight aside from Deep Breath.
Okay.
Into the Dalek and Robot of Sherwood each got 5.2, and so we've got the 0.07 over that. Into the Forest of the Night wound up with a 6.92 million and for a final and an AI of 83.
Hmm.
So a better AI than Listen. I'm going to need you guys to check your math on this stuff.
I think probably that there's a margin of error of like plus two or minus two. So they're really all getting pretty much the exact same number.
There we go. I like that plan. I like that idea. So
odds are good that if you watched the show last week, you're probably going to watch it this week.
Yeah.
Moving on.
I'll be interested to see what the final is on this one, though, because I know, like, most people wanted to actually see this exactly because we knew things were coming. You didn't want to be sitting there at work on Monday and somebody, you know, like, say something on Twitter.
Have to put your fingers in your ear. La, 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 la.
Yeah. It's like, oh, man, I knew I shouldn't have checked Twitter. Dang it.
Yeah, I started scrolling through Facebook, which is usually pretty safe. And then I just start seeing Missy in capital letters all over the place. I'm like, nope.
No, that's that moment. Like, as soon as I know that it's coming on in the UK, my phone goes down. I go dark until I get a chance to watch it.
Well, I know not to go near Twitter, but.
Well, yeah. You mean Spoilerberg?
No, but now the funny thing is if you want to start seeing the way that you can manipulate it, you've always got Tumblr there to be able to see how the visual aspect of the episode is going to be torn to shreds because Photoshop hell is a giant Tumblr account. I think it was within 40 minutes of the UK airing coming to an end that the screen caps that had been modified to hell and back were flying across Tumblr. But surprisingly, not in Moffat hate. They were doing more things like transgender jokes and things of that sort. You know, Dr. Snogging Roger Del Toro and things of that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so we do have a little bit of news this week. Apparently, Neil Gaiman has said that he wants another shot at Doctor Who.
So do we.
Well, yeah, no, I absolutely want to see it. He said that he would love to write for Capaldi's Doctor, and I think that would be absolutely fantastic.
Oh, my God, yeah.
He actually said, because it would be a very sad thing if I lost my chance to write for a grumpy Scottish doctor. So I'm all behind this. I want to see another Gaiman episode. But he did say that he said, I haven't done an episode on Earth yet, and I haven't created a new monster. So there are boxes left to tick. So,
you know, if anybody can create a disturbing villain, it's Neil Gaiman.
Yeah.
Imagine that this is going to have to be one of those episodes where the dialogue is going to get so intense and so rapid fire, especially being delivered by Capaldi. You are going to have the subtitles on. I don't care if you live in London. You're turning the subtitles on so that you can figure out what it is that this man is raving about.
Yeah. Sorry, there's another, you know, raving Scotsman in the street. I didn't realize there was a match on. Oh, and then a little bit of non-news that we got this week. Apparently, there is a professor in Syracuse who is going to launch a Doctor Who class next semester.
I've complained about this before. When I went to school, we didn't have Doctor Who classes or comic book classes or Tolkien classes.
I know. Kids these days. Where's his stuff?
Jeez.
No, but
Shakespeare. He's totally dead.
He got all his best stuff from the doctor anyway. This is actually not going to be like a credit class, not something accepted on the school curriculum. This is more just a, you know, anyone can come and pay their however many dollars. And
we'll take your money. We're just not going to give you any credit for it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I forget what it's called, but when you do classes outside of the curriculum and you still get like
auditing.
Some kind of.
Well, no, auditing is when you're not actually enrolled in the class. See, that's my retort. If you're going to give me a class that doesn't give me any credit, then I'm not going to pay you for the class. I'm just going to sit in there. I'm auditing.
Yeah.
This isn't really a class and I'm not really here. So what do you not really want to talk about? I'm not going to hand in any papers either.
I don't know. I mean, I think that I would absolutely take my chance to go and sit in on this at least once or twice. But I would love to take a Doctor Who class. I'm just saying.
Just sit in the back going, nope. Boo.
No, I believe if you will check episode 37, that is nothing. This is just going to turn into one big, like, you know, pedantic rave at some point. People are going to be complaining. It's like, no, 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 he can't use it to do that.
As you can see from this flow chart.
So we laugh. I'm sure they're out there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but then the last bit of, well, not really news, but apparently Kier is going to have some fun next week going to Long Island Who.
Yeah. So this is actually a revival of conventions that have been going on since the 70s. And it didn't really go on hiatus. It sort of got folded into other conventions, both Doctor Who centric and actually some Trek conventions and things that started merging around the greater Long Island and then the greater Five Borough area around New York. obviously with all of the return to fame and popularity that the show has had, as of last year, they brought back what had been labeled simply Long Island Doctor Who Con, or Long Island Who Con, or however you want to abbreviate it.
Mm.
So now back into its second year, but only even just being sort of in its reinvented form, the talent lineup is extensive, but it's still small enough that it's going to be very approachable. And I really hope that anybody who gets the opportunity that's out here in the East Coast area or in the greater New York area has an opportunity to come out. Official word, it is next weekend. It's November 7th, 8th, 9th, in Roanoke. The full weekend passes have been long since sold out, but I think you may still be able to get single day attendance badges.
I think all that's left at this point is Sunday, but I could be wrong. Go to
longislanddoctorwho.com
and check it there, because I could be completely wrong. So
yep, and let us know if you are going to try to attend, because I'd love to be able to meet up with listeners there and get a chance to chat with them for a bit and get their responses on, you know, how things have been coming along this series, you know, comments on us and how much we suck.
We always appreciate those.
Yeah, you know, constructive criticism is always welcome. Or just get a chance to kind of geek out for a little bit. Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely cool. I'll be there through the full weekend, from early Friday morning, because I have to set up for some interviews, all the way through to Sunday. Try to stay as late in the evening as I can. But yeah, by all means, please let us know. You can either get in touch with us by tweeting us through Gallifrey Radio, or at Gallifrey Radio, or you can tweet me directly at Keir Hansen. So yeah, let me know what's going on.
Yep. And for those of us that aren't going to be able to attend, Keir will be putting an article on GallifreyPublicRadio.com. If you'd seen the one that he did on Dragon Con, it's absolutely great. So by all means, just keep an eye out for that. That'll go up at some point after the convention.
Yeah, we will have a whole series finale to get through and some things to discuss. By the way, I love the fact that at this convention, because this was a genuine concern for us, they are doing screenings of the final episode in two different halls. The quiet hall for people that really need to hear everything that's said, and then the ruckus hall where people are planning on screaming, jumping up and down, rending their clothes, gnashing their teeth, or whatever it is that they feel is necessary to do for an hour and 10 minutes.
I like the fact that both places will have closed captioning, though.
Yeah, Mm-hmm.
That's the way to do it, though. But again, that does take a little bit of self-awareness to know, okay, which one of these do I belong in?
Well, I remember at Dragon Con this past year, that was where we got the screening a couple hours ahead of time for Into the Dalek, and didn't have subtitles on, so you're kind of left to your own devices, and there were 2,500 people in the room.
Oh, wow.
So the potential to be cacophony was there, but everybody was really respectful. Because I think they realized that they were just as invested in wanting to get as much out of it as they could. Mm-hmm. So I got a feeling that even if you were in the loud room for this thing, it's not going to be insanity, because there's just too much that you want to gather.
Yeah. You just have the opportunity to react at a, you know, inappropriate level.
Right.
Or volume, whatever.
But I'm still going to head towards the quiet room just so I can make sure I gather as much as I can. I plan on probably jotting notes down too while I'm in there. But.
So for anyone that wants to tell Keir that he absolutely does not belong in the quiet room, you can send your emails to Keir@GallifreyPublicRadio.com.
You head down!
Down in front, be shorter.
I can't see. It's like a virtual planetoid. It's got its own gravitational pull.
It's like an orange on a toothpick. Gonna cry himself to sleep on this giant pillar. Alright, well, this has been episode 110 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, Clara, is it over?
And this is Keir saying, get ready now, kids, for the shocking return of all your favorite dead companions.
Except for Adric, he's really dead.
Sorry, Badger.
And this is Haley saying, speak for me again, I'll detach something from you.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@GallifreyPublicRadio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You can also go to GunnaGeek.com to check out lots of other high-quality, geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2014.